it just wasn't really lining up with what I thought that it would be and also what I wanted. And not only is it affecting me, but it's affecting my family too. I dragged my wife across, you know, the country and away from a job that was potentially closer to her family and her home as we're starting our own family. I felt terrible.
Welcome to Your Future Insight, a podcast where we showcase stories featuring doctors and other healthcare professionals early in their careers.
We'll take a deep dive into their day-to-day lives, focusing on how they navigate the current landscape of medicine. Each story is personal, captivating, and uniquely crafted by their individual perspectives and experiences.
In each episode, we'll discuss their challenges and aspirations, and most importantly, their journey, to give us insight into the future of medicine.
My name is Andres Parra.
And I'm Gio Campagna.
And we are your bro hosts, two friends turned ophthalmologists who enjoy learning from our peers. Let's get started.
In today's episode, we will be talking with Jackson Goldberg. Jackson is a cataract and refractive surgeon in West Palm Beach, Florida. He grew up in Dallas, Texas, and is a longtime UT Longhorns fan. He went to medical school at the McGovern Medical School at UT Houston, followed by a rigorous ophthalmology residency at UT Southwestern in Dallas. He's here today to share his personal experience with life after residency and to provide some unique insight about what it's like to leave your first job. This is surprisingly common and a fear that many trainees have, so we're looking forward to hearing his story. Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Jackson. We really appreciate you spending some time with us to talk about a subject that I know a lot of us are even a little bit afraid of and some might consider slightly taboo. You and I have been buddies for a really long time, and I'm just really excited that you're going to share with us and with our audience a little bit of insight about something that's really deep, quite personal in nature. So would you start by telling us just a little bit about yourself so we can get into the meat of this topic?
Yeah, of course. Thanks a lot for having us on. You know, Gio and I talk all the time, so this kind of just feels like one of our weekly phone calls that we have. So my name's Jackson Goldberg. I grew up in the Dallas area. Went to college at UT, so as you can see, I'm a huge Longhorns fan. My wife went to Florida State, and they're starting the season today. We just had a baby, so I had to let her know where our child is going to go to school.
That's a tough combo.
For the football season today. After UT, I went to medical school at UT Houston. And I had a great 4 years there training in the Texas Medical Center. It was excellent training. You know, I used to call it a quaternary care center because that was where the tertiary centers sent everything, all the weird stuff, you know, from other parts of the country or other parts of the world. After that, I trained at UT Southwestern in Dallas, which is a notorious workhorse residency program. Fantastic training, long hours, learned a lot about myself there, kind of dug down deep and really kind of pushed my limits and made me a really confident resident and confident surgeon. And
and why did you choose ophthalmology?
Yeah, so, you know, I tell this to a lot of people. It was not a love at first sight. It was a process of elimination thing. So I'm the youngest of six kids, and I'm the fourth doctor of the six of us. And the other two are lawyers, so it's like a classic Jewish family. We had two choices, and both were high education routes. You know, I didn't grow up with a whole lot, and my parents wanted us to have really stable fields, and so post college education was really stressed. And two of my siblings are radiologists, so I looked at that, and I definitely wanted something procedurally based, and I wanted to have, you know, a nice life. I wanted to have some time with my family, time to travel, time to have all my hobbies, but also a rewarding career with great outcomes. And so when you think about it, it really limits your options. You know, you're not going to be a vascular surgeon and have these fantastic outcomes with these terrible vasculopath patients where, you know, you may have really sick people. I didn't want to sit in a dark room all day like my siblings who are radiologists. Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to work with my hands and I wanted to be in a field with a lot of technology and a lot of toys. And ophthalmology is definitely that. So when I kind of went down the list of everything, ophthalmology had everything that I was looking for. Even though it wasn't from day one of medical school, hey, I want to be an eye surgeon. I think the eye is so interesting. It was one of those things where it was like, hey, this field has everything that I want. And it just so happens to be very interesting. And the more I got into it, the more rewarding it was.
You know, that's so interesting because I feel like maybe this is the case for the majority of people. Ophthalmology probably isn't the reason why most people go into medical school. And certainly, like, Gio has a different background. You know, his dad is an ophthalmologist, so he kind of knew about it from early on, even if he didn't know that that's what he wanted to do. I had no idea that ophthalmology, like, it wasn't on my radar whatsoever. I thought I might do pediatrics or something, but then quickly decided I want to do something surgical, kind of do some cutting. And ophthalmology, like you said, is a fantastic field for so many different reasons. Clearly, we're biased, but we're happy with the field right. we chose. But I want to learn a little bit more about, you know, it sounds like, you know, you're a private practice ophthalmologist now. When you were going through training, is that something that you knew all along that you wanted to do, like private practice? Did you ever think about academics? Integrated healthcare system like Kaiser. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I kind of always assumed I would end up in private practice because that's where all of my siblings are and that's where the majority of physicians are. I do have, you know, a little bit of an entrepreneurial bone in my body, which a lot of ophthalmologists do. And so private practice was kind of always where I thought I would end up. I flirted with academics a little bit when I was mostly an intern. At Dell, which is where Gio and I were overlapped a little bit, because we had some really nice faculty there. And even though it was not ophthalmology, it was internal medicine, but we had really great faculty there. And that was my first exposure to having medical students follow me a little bit. And so I kind of was like, oh, this is really cool. You have a team, you get to share your knowledge. And I do get a little bit of that in my current job. We work with the Larkin residency program. And so I staff, you know, about 2 cataracts a week, maybe 5 a month. It kind of depends. Right now it's July, so it's a little bit slower, so there's less numbers. We just kind of add them on at the end of my surgery day. So I do kind of scratch that teaching itch. For me, academics was more about working with students and residents than it was doing research or having the goal of one day being, you know, a department chair or something like that. I really didn't have a lot of interest in navigating the politics that academic medicine can present.
Yeah, it's definitely a messy thing for some people. Obviously, all of us have had such terrific experiences at one point or another with, you know, incredible faculty who have at some point made a lasting impact. And we all have this urge to pay it forward a little bit. And like you said, scratch that teaching itch one way or another. But it's true. Most of us end up in private practice. That's just where the majority of medicine is practiced in this country. Walk us through the last 6 months of your residency training and how you ultimately started looking for your first job and what those things were that really appealed to you.
Yeah, so I would say more so the last 12 months, because the last 6 months I had already had a contract signed and was, you know, pretty confident where I was going, which was kind of nice because your last year of residency, you know, in ophthalmology training, it's not like you're banging out a ton of cataracts, your PGY2 in 3 years. It's really the vast majority are on the back end of that. So knowing that I was going to become a comprehensive ophthalmologist, I kind of had a little bit more of a leeway in my PGY4 year where I could, you know, I scheduled my cataract rotations actually a little bit, the heavier ones, a little bit toward the end of the year so that I could kind of hit the ground running in private practice and kind of had an idea of what I wanted to get out of that last year so that I could become a more confident surgeon. I would say I started looking for a job in August of my PGY4 year. And there wasn't a ton of guidance from faculty because a lot of the faculty where I trained were either very young and this was their first job in academics, or they were academic lifers and had, you know, extensive research and extensive academic qualifications. So I leaned a lot on my brother-in-law, who is a private practice retina surgeon in the Dallas area, mm-hmm. and other professional relationships that I had formed throughout residency. We had a lot of volunteer faculty at UT Southwestern who would come teach us and staff our cataract surgery. And, you know, there's always, you know, maybe 20 minutes of downtime with academic OR turnover. And so I really took advantage of those 20 minutes instead of just, you know, sitting in the corner. You know, I'm a friendly guy by nature. And so that kind of just happened organically. But I really used that time to, you know, pick their brains, because not every day do you have a community ophthalmologist who's willing to sit down with you for 20 minutes or, you know, if you're doing 3 cases with them, an hour, and kind of tell you about their journey. And you can learn a little bit from them and how they got to their roles. Because a lot of the times I feel like when you're in residency, your patterns that you have to follow aren't necessarily where you're going to practice. Like I said, a lot of our faculty were, you know, between 1 and 5 years out, and they had been faculty at UT Southwestern for that entire time. And so I didn't have a really a clear blueprint in front of me as to how to do this. And so I leaned on older residents too. So ultimately I used the AAO job board, and, you know, I talked to a couple of the recruiting services a little bit, but, you know, they kept presenting me with jobs that I wasn't really asking for. I kind of, you know, would give them, hey, this is the geographic area I'm looking for. This is the type of practice I want. This is the, you know, and they would present me back with, okay, well, this job has two of the four things that you asked for, or three of the five things that you asked for. And it wasn't really, you know, checking every box. And so ultimately I figured, you know, a better use of my time was to, you know, just go and find it myself. And, you know, and I did cold calls and practices as well.
So that brings up a really good point. I mean, you're going to have varying amounts of exposure to private practice depending on what program you're at. And I think most major, you know, big name academic programs might have limited private practice exposure. We had some, but again, it's limited, and you really have to seek out those opportunities and maximize as best as you can. And I, you know, going through the job search about, you know, again, around the same timeline in terms of training for you, but, you know, I've been in out about two and odd something change years. I also was looking on the AAO job board. I think that was really useful to find within a geographic region. I had recruiters that, yes, sent me everything and anything, because, again, they kind of get paid based on you taking a job with them.
Their job. Yeah, it's their job to get you to sign a contract.
Exactly. And so they're another resource. And then I found that something else that was kind of helpful, what limited exposure I had to, you know, certain faculty that were either doing cataract refractive, which is what I wanted to do, having them kind of have feelers out in their geographic region to see if they knew somebody who might be hiring. And so that was one of the most fruitful avenues. But my question now for you is, based on, you know, kind of having these different places where you were looking for positions, and you having kind of limited guidance in how to do so, what parameters, what were you looking for? What did you want out of your first job? Yeah, what were your specific criteria besides this kind of geographic region you were kind of hoping to find a job in?
Yeah. So, I mean, geography was, you know, very important. Salary was important, because that's not really a transparent thing. I mean, you don't really know how much you're going to get paid. I mean, even in residency, you talk about it, but you really only know what if your senior residents tell you what their contracts look like. It's not a very transparent process. And then even going through the job search, it's also not a very transparent process. It's not like one of the first things that you talk about is salary with jobs. You feel each other out first, and, you know, some places are more negotiable than others. And so that was something that was high on my list. And then also the type of practice, right? I wanted to be a busy surgeon, but also a busy clinician. I didn't necessarily want to jump into one of these, you know, cataract machine practices where you are basically just operating and you're co-managing a lot of stuff. You're not seeing a lot of your own post-op day ones even. And, you know, as a young surgeon, I wanted that feedback on those post-operative visits so that I could continue to push myself and grow as a surgeon. And I also, something that I was looking for, because again, it was early in the job process, and in August, I hadn't done but, you know, maybe 60 cases, which was a fraction of what I ended up graduating with. So initially I wanted, you know, really strong surgical mentorship because I felt like I needed it. But then, you know, when you graduate and you've done, you know, 300 plus cases and you've kind of gotten in your groove, and, you know, by June of my PGY4 year, I was rocking out, you know, like 8-minute cases, and I knew the staff and the staff knew me, and I felt really comfortable. That surgical mentorship wasn't necessarily something that I was on the top of my list as far as a job criteria. And so that was kind of an interesting thing, kind of how some of the criteria evolve as you evolve as a doctor and as a person.
Sure. So you found this job that, at least on paper and in your mind, checked off all of these boxes, right? It was in a location that you loved. It had the, you know, the balance of clinic and surgery that you thought you wanted. And you get started. Tell us a little bit about what those first couple of weeks were like, and maybe how your expectations differed from reality.
Yeah, those early days were slow, and I think they're slow for a lot of people. You know, I didn't expect to walk into a clinic and see 40 patients my first day. I think that's not very realistic. But they were a little slower than I anticipated. You know, I think that when you finish training, you're so busy and you're so eager to show everybody that you can do everything and that you learned all of this material in 4 or 5 years, depending on, you know, your length of training, that you don't really realize that patients, you have to help get patients in the door. It's not like the residency clinic where it's bursting at the seams and there's, you know, 6-8 month wait times. And it's also not, you know, you read these things on AAO about how there's huge shortages of ophthalmologists throughout the country. And you think, oh, this is great news for me. All the boomers are retiring. They all need cataract surgery. I have a cataract surgeon. This should be really easy. It's not.
Yeah,
it's not. And so
the data, I feel like, actually shows that it's a very smaller subset of surgeons that are actually doing the highest volume of surgery. And then it gets more sprinkled out between the rest of the surgeons. So it's kind of like there's still kind of gatekeepers to a lot of the volume.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, the first few weeks were pretty slow. I don't think I got into the operating room maybe for, I want to say, 3 or 4 months. And, you know, as a young surgeon, that's a long time to have a gap. I remember in residency, I had tore my ACL and had a pretty significant knee surgery and rehab, and I didn't operate for like 3 weeks. And I was like, man, that's such a long time. And it's like, well, 3 months, it's like riding a bike. It's very easy to do, but sure. You know, when you finish, you're so eager. And so part of that was credentialing, but also part of that was just need the patients.
Did your practice give you any expectations about your projected clinical volume? Did you walk in thinking, you know, I really was under the impression that I'm going to be seeing this many people, or my clinic is going to grow at this rate? Or do you think maybe you romanticized it too much? Is that natural?
I think there's a little bit of truth to both of those statements. I think that they did give me some expectations that I think were maybe be a little bit lofty on their end, which is, you know, part of what you're doing. You are selling yourself in an interview. They are selling you the practice. So, you know, maybe cards were overplayed a little bit. And I also think maybe I romanticized it a little bit too. I think that you have this idea of being a busy surgeon and pushing your limits and knowing your skills and what you can do. And so you just think, oh yeah, people are going to come to me and I'm going to do great. I'm going to get great outcomes. I'm a nice person. I'm going to treat people the right way. They're going to send all their friends and family to me. And, you know, sometimes they don't do that. They send their friends and family to the person that they've known who's been in their backyard for 15 years, not the new person.
Yeah.
And
go ahead.
The optometry aspect of it as well. I think that they're trying to get optometrists to refer to a new surgeon, a young surgeon in the area, when they have already an established referral network with presumably very good outcomes because they are continuing to send those people. That's a huge gate to try and break through. I mean, it's, you know, the optometrists are really the ones feeding you a lot of your surgical volume, and you can be a nice person. You can be a great surgeon, but if they don't really give you a chance, it's very difficult to prove that.
Absolutely. A great, fantastic point. I think so many of us don't recognize that when you get out into private practice, you kind of have to, even if you're within a practice that presumably is going to feed you per se, you kind of have to do your own work in terms of finding these patients, winning with time only is the only way you can do it. Trust with some of these optometrists and other primary care
crumble
referral practices.
Too.
Lots of crumbles. They're used to getting crumbles. So sometimes you got to knock 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times before you get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
And
some of them won't even see you.
Sometimes
you go there and they're busy with their own patients, which is totally understandable, but it's like, whoa, I didn't realize.
You think, hey, I'm a nice guy. They're going to listen to me. They're going to love me. I'm likable. And it's just not how it pans out. They have established relationships with people, and that can be really hard to break. But my question for you, because I feel like we had a kind of similar trajectory, you know, I also had to kind of drum up some business for myself, some patients for myself. When did you first kind of realize that, you know, maybe the job goals and you, what you wanted out of, you know, your position, when did it not line up? What started to change? What kind of clued you in that something wasn't quite right?
Yeah, I would say maybe about 4 to 6 weeks in, when I just wasn't seeing any sort of upward trajectory. I kind of anticipated it would be slow, but not as slow, because again, I had extensive conversations kind of about what I thought my clinic would do and, you know, how my surgical volume would grow, and kind of discussed with some of the other younger associates there about kind of how their volume and their trajectory was in their first, you know, month, 2 months there. And it just wasn't really lining up with what I thought that it would be, and also what I wanted. So at a certain point, it was, I kind of had to say to myself, you know what, it doesn't really matter the conversations I had. This is the scenario that I'm in now. This is kind of the trajectory that is now present. And you have to say, am I going to, you know, stick this out and do it? Or do you want to cut your losses and kind of start looking around and kind of seeing how things are going to go? And you may say, oh, 4 to 6 weeks, that doesn't sound like a long time at all. It's not at all. But sometimes you can just kind of tell that something may not be working out. In addition to that, my wife and I kind of learned that the area was not quite what we thought it was going to be. And so as our concerns with living in the city grew, so did my concerns with my job, because then happiness is now needing to come more from work, more from work, more from work. And so as
put it, amplifies that lens of how you feel about the position.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So you get more and more frustrated because more and more of your happiness needs to come from that.
So that's, yeah, I feel very similar in so many different ways. What ultimately did that conversation kind of look like when you, and what did, you know, the partners and the practice think? What, how did it feel for you to, like, you know, feel like you were leaving this job that, you know,
you thought would so be much your job, you know, time and effort into exactly, early on.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, the conversation at first, I think, was positive. I think that they were kind of understanding. So the first conversation I had with them wasn't, hey, I'm leaving. It was,
right,
hey, you know, what do you see for me? What is this going to look like? How is this going to grow? I feel like this is not necessarily matching up with what we talked about, you know. And there was a lot of kind of back and forth there, for lack of a better term. And I did want to give them the benefit of the doubt because they were nice people. And, you know, I wanted to succeed and they wanted me to succeed ostensibly as well. I mean, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. And as kind of it became a little bit more clear that it wasn't going to work out, the conversations naturally soured a little bit. I don't think there was any ever animosity there between, certainly not on my end. You know, it was just, hey, I don't think this is going to work out. You know, I'm happy to have crossed paths with you. I have no problems with you as a person or professionally, and I wish your practice success, but I just don't see myself having the type of practice that I want here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how you transitioned from this the sort of first position to the second. Were you kind of, when you had committed in your mind to leaving this first practice, I imagine you had already started scoping out other opportunities probably, right? When did you kind of find that right fit for you? And did you figure that out before you left your first job? Did you figure it out after you left?
Yeah. So the position where I'm currently at reached out to me and never really stopped talking to me after I interviewed with them the first time. And this was, you know, like 18 months prior to me, you know, joining them. And I had a good relationship with the owner of the current practice that I'm at. And we were friendly on, you know, a personal level. And the area that I'm living in now in West Palm Beach, my wife is from here. And so when we would come visit, my wife would want to do, you know, something with her friends one night. And I didn't know a whole lot of people here. And so one day I just texted the guy. I said, hey, I'm in town. My wife's going to go out with her friends. You want to have a drink? You want to have dinner? You were a nice guy when I met you. It didn't work out, you know, the first time with me signing there for whatever reason. The reason was I just really wanted to try something different and live in Colorado for a little bit because I had romanticized the mountains and having four seasons my whole life. After growing up in Texas, I feel like Colorado is like the natural progression for all Texans.
Like, summer's still going strong in September, humidity. By the way. 100 plus degrees. Sure. Yeah, we're doing good.
I'm sure. So it was kind of a natural progression, and, you know, we ended up flying out and having dinner, and it just kind of it happened rather quickly.
This was before you left your first practice.
Yeah, so I didn't have some massive war chest that I was sitting on. I was out of residency for, yeah, you know, like 4 months. My wife was pregnant and,
oh my,
you know, I was like, okay, like I have to work, you know, I have student loans to pay off. And I want to work too. I had just had this big gap where I wasn't really doing a whole lot of surgery and where I wasn't seeing a whole lot of patients. And not that I was worried about losing the skills, but I wanted to stay sharp.
Sure.
And I think we all can relate to that. And I didn't want this huge gap.
I can imagine the kind of anxiety. And did you ever feel any, like, man, like kind of feel like a failure or any kind of shame associated with having to move on. Like I can only imagine. So I can tell you from my personal experience, you know, I joined a position that we were told in residency by one of our, you know, good mentors, you know, your first job out of practice is kind of like you're having a girlfriend in high school. If it works out, then great. You marry your high school sweetheart, but majority of the time, or, you know, 50-50 flip of a coin, it might not be the girlfriend for the rest of your life. And so I kind of took that to heart, and I felt like I did so much research, really looked into so many different practices. And I was like, I'm going to make my job be the one job. I want to do this one and done, just be set up. And so I actually got connected to my position through one of our mentors at UCLA, reached out to a previous fellow who worked in the Houston area. And so they kind of connected me with this position. And I was like, this seems like a great deal. When I talked to them, they were like, you know, our older partner is going to be retiring in the next few years. You know, it's a competitive landscape in Houston, but really it's kind of a golden opportunity because you just kind of assume their volume and then don't have to go out and create a whole new business on your own. And so that seemed really appealing to me. My wife is from Houston. We were really excited by that possibility. And so I thought it was a great fit. They were a cataract refractive boutique practice, which is exactly what I wanted to be in. But of course, as you get there, the realities of what actually pans out isn't always the case. The older partner actually didn't want to retire as soon as, you know, initially considered.
Naturally, so
they didn't want to pass on the referral sources. And then this left me in a super competitive landscape with a lot of mega practices having to go out and market. And then, getting your foot in the door with optometrists is very, very difficult. And so similar to you, I kind of saw the writing on the wall. It's like this volume isn't quite getting there. And I kind of wish, you know, I'd put destiny in my own hands and just been marketing super hardcore from the get-go. But regardless, it just ultimately didn't really pan out. And I felt just like you. I want my hands busier. I want more volume. I want to be doing more surgery. And it's the feeling of kind of failure that you're like, oh my gosh, I did all this hard work and now I'm like kind of starting over 2 years out. It's really, really discouraging. I think actually Gio actually helped me a lot through some of those times when I felt like, man, this is like, I can't believe this is happening to me. It's hard to believe when it happens to you. But at the end of the day, ultimately, I felt like I learned so much about me. I didn't do a fellowship. So this kind of job was kind of like a fellowship for me because I got a lot of, you know, on-the-job training of how to do cataract refractive and LASIK and PRK. And so I took a lot of great things from it, had some good mentorship. And at the same time, as I was looking for a new job, I realized that the opportunities in terms of, you know, it's not all about the money, but it certainly matters. And the salary numbers were just a lot higher. The opportunities were really great for me to get really good volume. And so it ended up being a blessing in disguise, but it's so hard when you're going through those moments to really like find that insight of like, man, it's going to be okay. You're going to be fine. You're early on in your careers. It's okay to pivot. But I just can really empathize of how stressful that must be, even with like your wife being pregnant. Like, you know, that's really a really pretty crazy time.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot going on at this, you know, at this particular moment in all of our careers for sure. And we all have this dream of having a sort of Tim Duncan or Dirk Nowitzki career where you're with this one practice that's awesome for your whole life. And, you know, you have all kinds of major successes with it. But I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but the truth is that somewhere around half and maybe even more than half of new graduates, at least in ophthalmology and probably from other surgical subspecialties, don't stick with their first job. And so it's become the norm. And I think that we do
have to. I would argue that that's only going up.
Probably so. And there's a stigma around it.
As medicine changes,
right. And so can you share with us just a little bit about how you – you know, maybe felt that stigma kind of enveloped around you? I mean, I personally, you know, it's natural probably to feel sad and a little bit embarrassed and not want to share that with other people, even though you kind of need to in order to get some closure and move on.
Yeah, I'm a pretty open person in general, so I had no problems really discussing my feelings. I mean, I felt terrible.
Yeah.
I felt like shit. You know, it's not like I was a bad resident and couldn't get a job and this was just like the only job that would take me. You know, this is the job that I wanted. And to kind of have to search within yourself and say, hey, like, I made a mistake. And not only is it affecting me, but it's affecting my family too. I dragged my wife across, you know, the country and away from a job that was potentially closer to her family and her home as we're starting our own family. And, you know, you have to be really, really humble about it. And it's okay to make mistakes. It's totally fine. I did worry about how it would look on a resume saying, you know, hey, you were only at this place for 4 months. Like,
that's a great point.
What's wrong with this person? Is he really difficult to get along with? Is he a bad surgeon? Do patients not like him? And I was really concerned about that. And the more I spoke to mentors, and especially private practice mentors, as I was meeting them more and more, being in private practice myself, the default was, oh, no, nothing's wrong with you. Nothing's wrong with you. You know, this is totally normal. Everybody has a story like this. If anything, congratulations for doing it in 4 months instead of 4 years.
Man, if I could go back and get this out of my system in like 4 months instead of like the 2 years that it really took me to make this transition, I feel, and you know, it's fine. Whenever it happens, it happens. But that's a really good point. Like, this is a tale as old as time, this happening where the associateship doesn't work out. And so good on you for like making that decision early.
And so reframing it like that really helped me. And again, this wasn't even me personally reframing it. This was other people telling me, hey, you should not feel bad about this. This is not on you. And, you know, I guess the disappointing thing is that I felt like going into the job search that I did more homework than a lot of my peers, that I talked to more people, that I, you know, read the contracts closer, that I gave myself more opportunities. And so I naturally assumed that would lead to more success and a better match. And sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And it doesn't mean necessarily that you did anything wrong. Sometimes you just end up choosing an opportunity that you thought was good at the time and ended up not being good at the time, or maybe the opportunity itself changed a little bit.
Yeah. So now you're with your second practice and you've been with them for 9 months now, maybe close to a year. You're clearly willing to stick it out now. You've achieved some level of professional and personal success and happiness. Can you walk us through a little bit of the differences this time around, how you knew you were going to stick it out rather than, you know, go look for something else?
Yeah, I think, first of all, we like this area a lot more. We have more family ties here. We have better roots here. And so automatically, I'm just more comfortable going to the grocery store here, having dinner on a Friday night. And that goes volumes, because like we were talking about earlier, you know, when so much of your success or happiness is tied to your professional success rather than your personal life, it puts a lot of stress on a job. So when you kind of take away some of that stress and, you know, you're just happier in your area, you are much more flexible with things. In addition to that, this job is definitely, I'm much busier. I'm getting the volume that, you know, I thought I would. I think that every young ophthalmologist is going to tell you, no, I'm not busy enough. And unless you're doing, you know, 35 cases a week and seeing 60 patients a day in clinic and doing all this stuff. And that's just not a realistic thing to, you know, start out. And some people don't ever achieve that. I mean, I would venture to say most people don't ever achieve, you know, doing 25 plus cases a week. That is, like you were talking about earlier with the podcast, there are a handful of people that get there that kind of do most of the surgery and ophthalmology, and then there's a sprinkle of everything else. And sometimes that's circumstance. Sometimes it's, you know, that person is just a great surgeon and garners a good reputation. Sometimes it's they had a really great business manager kind of helping them get into that position, or they chose the right area at the right time. And sometimes it's just luck.
Yeah, totally.
Do you have any regrets about leaving that first job? You ever wish you had maybe given it a little more time? I mean, I know you're happy now, but you know, you certainly had beliefs in mind at some point in your life that practice had on paper everything that you wanted. So do you ever kind of wish you had maybe given it more time, or is there anything you would have done differently about the whole situation?
Yeah, I would have stuck in through ski season probably. No, just kidding. Yeah, I mean, of course, I wonder about what would happen if I had stayed. To give a little context, that group also lost another doctor shortly after me. So I wonder if I ended up staying there, if, you know, that person ended up leaving and I assumed a lot of that volume from a more established ophthalmologist, you know, could I have gotten really busy really quickly and then it would have completely changed the outlook for me? Absolutely. That's natural to wonder. But I think because, you know, I'm happy here and I like this area a lot more, I don't necessarily think about that all the time. But yeah, the thought runs through my mind for sure.
And I think that's a great mentality. Just from hearing you, you sound like you're really happy and settled in where you are, which is fantastic. And, you know, your family's happy, which is arguably the most important thing. But I really want to thank you because this, I think this is a really validating thing for so many people that are listening to this out there, whether you're early in your career or even if you haven't started your first job, like, yes, even if you do all the research, like, it's great. You should. You absolutely should still look at all the contracts, think about exactly what you want to get out of a position, make the best possible decision. I certainly thought I did. Sometimes you don't take into account that perhaps when people are hiring you, they don't know the landscape of what may happen in the next couple of years either. And they may be thinking they're more prepared to have someone else on that they're perhaps not ready for. But regardless, like, there's so much learning that you can do about yourself during that first time. Like, now you had a much better sense of what you wanted, what it looked like on paper. You have this kind of ambiguous, like, I think this is what I want coming out of residency. But once you've been in the thick of it, you kind of get a better sense of, like, what exactly it is you like. And so that growth process of learning about yourself and, like, what exactly you want out of a practice, yes, it's kind of a mistake. I'm so glad that it happened to me, that I got to pivot and find something that I'm happy with, both geographically and certainly professionally. And it's okay to speak about this with other people and let them know, because I think you'll find a lot of other people have this same story of not ending up where they thought they would and finding something else that was right for them.
Yeah, it's actually been tremendously helpful for me to be such close friends with both of you, because I'm a little bit further behind in terms of, you know, the progression of my career. I did a fellowship and I'm just now starting my first job. And both of you have been in the workforce for a very long time relative to what I've been through. And hearing your experiences openly and honestly has really helped me to, you know, approach my current situation with just a very, very open mind, because I think it's really important that we don't put all our eggs in one basket and, you know, just make sure that we think to ourselves, it's okay if something doesn't work out. There doesn't have to be shame or embarrassment. And, you know, both of you have grown tremendously over the last several months, even despite having gone through these, you know, traditionally what we would consider a really challenging experience. So I applaud both of you for going through something that I haven't yet had to go through, but I know that if I ever do, I'll, you know, essentially, you know, be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, as both of you have. One other question we wanted to ask is, you know, having gone through this and knowing that there is somebody, you know, right now who may be going through this, especially at, you know, given the fact that it's August and this is a common time for many people to start their first job, what kind of advice would you have for them as to those things they should be looking for early on, you know, the so-called writing on the wall, as you put it? What should they be looking for right now to ensure that, you know, they're going to be happy or that they've maximized their chances of being happy in their first job?
It's a fantastic question. I think that, you know, the feeling internally of, hey, can I have an open and honest conversation with the people in this practice who can control my situation about this? And if you feel like the answer is yes and you can approach them, then yeah, you should probably give it more time, because that means internally you feel like, hey, these people are really invested in my success and they're not going to take this personally. And, you know, they probably understand where I'm coming from. Hey, I'm a young surgeon. I want to get busier. If the answer is no, then you kind of have to ask yourself why you don't feel comfortable having that conversation or approaching them. And, you know, can you change the answer from no to yes with, you know, getting to know them better or you know, putting more of your own time and effort into it and marketing yourself a little bit more? Or, you know, if you don't feel like you can change that answer, yeah, maybe you should kind of, you know, consider why that is. And if you're feeling like you can envision yourself having long-term success with people that you can't really feel like you have an honest conversation with.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. There's also, you know, your ability to have a great relationship with existing partners and other associates and seeing what kind of trajectory the other associates followed, or if there haven't been many, seeing just what that journey might possibly look like. There's just things to consider too when you're looking at a job position, and it's things that you know and things that you know you might want, things that you don't know and things that you don't know that you don't know. And so there's going to be plenty of those things too that you learn once you actually get into practice that you had no idea about, you know, the little minutiae of like how you code certain things and billing and how that affects your productivity and whether that gives you potential to become a partner at some point. So you learn some of those things on the job. I think if you make as good as educated, you know, position, depending on what you're looking for out of the position, depending on where the location that you want to be in, and the kind of trajectory that you see. And most importantly, if a job looks fantastic on paper, but you don't get along with the other people that are established there and you feel like you can't have that conversation, that's such a good point. Even the like nonverbal, the body language that that person might have with you when you meet with them, that all really matters tremendously. But I wanted to pivot a little bit here in terms of, you know, we talk a lot about medicine, but we know that's not our entire identity. You know, you're a family man too, and you really like the Longhorns. Yeah. So I wanted to ask totally something off topic here, just to learn a little bit more about you and spice it up. You know, if you had to choose something outside of medicine altogether, it could be based on a hobby or just something that you always had an interest in, what do you think you'd be doing today if it was something outside of medicine?
I think I'd be working as a pit master somewhere. I just recently learned that one of my friends pays his pit masters well into the six figures. So I kind of question about my choices sometimes, but I could be, you know, sitting smoking some brisket and having some beers and getting paid roughly what I do now.
You're sure Texas wasn't right for you?
There's always time. I don't know. It's a strong magnet, the queso and Texas Longhorns. they still have my heart.
I think the beauty of ophthalmology is that you certainly have, you know, the time to find like whatever hobbies you like. Yeah. You could probably be smoking meat on the weekends if you really want to.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's a fantastic career, and there are a lot of some days in clinic it's very easy to complain. Sometimes you have challenging patients. I mean, you know, I tell this story not infrequently because it happens not infrequently. I'll take the drape off of a, you know, premium refractive cataract patient. They'll say it's blurry. I say, great, I just did surgery. I wanted to be blurry because that means I was doing something, you know. And, you know, it's really easy to kind of get caught up in that stuff. But there are so many positive aspects of being an eye surgeon. I mean, there are just so few people who can touch lives the way that we do and positively impact the world the way that we do. And despite challenges in job searches and changes in macroeconomic factors in medicine that are, you know, impacting us on a daily basis, the fact that we are able to do this and provide a comfortable living and provide for a family, I mean,
yeah,
pretty cool.
I think that's a really, really terrific ending to this conversation, because it's important that we end with a little bit of optimism too. All of us are very, very happy with the choices that we've made, and it is important to emphasize that. But we just want to take a moment to sincerely thank you for going over this, you know, challenging and very personal topic with us. We really appreciate your insight. And if you like this content, please consider liking and subscribing. It really helps to show some support for the work that we do. So thank you so much, Jackson, and you know, best of luck to you and your new family.
And Jackson, I got to thank you too. I know this is kind of our first time chatting at length, but you know, we have very similar stories. It's really great and validating just hearing someone else who had a similar journey. And yeah, absolutely, I'm so grateful that I get to do what I get to do. I get to provide for my family, I get to have a massive impact on people's lives and vision, and I get to be a part of that journey with them in a vulnerable time. So thank you for reminding us things to be grateful for, and thanks for being here with us. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you for making me an honorary broho for the day.
That's absolutely right. We'll send your degree by the mail.
Thanks, bud.